Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Okay, in the glossy cutthroat world of fashion, here's a question for you. Where might God fit in? That's a question Phil Tarling may well be able to answer. Phil is a stylist to the stars based in the UK. He has clothed, primped and preened many a celebrity, from Sienna Miller to Yoan Griffin to Joanna Lumley and Jermaine Jackson. And he's helped hone the on-screen images of TV presenters from shows like X Factor to Top Gear. And while some may say the fashion world is shallow, Phil, who is actually a committed Christian as well, believes it is a, quote, explosion of God's creativity. He's on the line from London now and has probably just finished his breakfast. Phil, welcome to Open House.
Thank you very much indeed. I have just finished my breakfast. You're very right there.
Thankfully, it's a respectable time for you. Now,
it is a respectable time, you're right.
Why did the stylist job jump out to you and say, well, maybe this is the thing I should commit my career to?
I started at the BBC and I was trained at the BBC as a dresser. And I did that from 91 to 95. And during those 5 years, I worked incredibly hard and acutely long hours on some of the shows I worked on. I was working up to 100 hours a week. And in 95, I got married. And I thought to myself, if I prolong working in this industry, I don't anticipate it would be, it'd make for a healthy marriage. So I was thinking on my feet, what else can I do? I've got washing skills, ironing skills, continuity skills, I work with clothes, what on earth could I possibly do? And I came across, quite a few kind of strange, bulky, middle-aged women who would turn up on set, throw clothes at artists, tell them what to wear, and these were stylists. I thought, my gosh, surely I can do that, right? I can do that. And at the time, I was working on one of our primetime soaps here called EastEnders as a wardrobe guy. Yeah. And I was speaking to the publicity department, and I said, listen, I'm interested in being a stylist. You know, what do you think? How can I get into it? And they said, oh, yeah, we can help you out. So it was their responsibility to set up photo shoots to get on the front covers of weekly magazines. And they obviously call in the stylists and they call in the hair and makeup artists. And they gave me a shot.
Yeah, and explain what you do in the snapshot of a typical day. I mean, pick Thursday or Friday last week. What did you do and how do you do what you do?
So I have to say I don't have a typical day. It's not the luxury I have. Each day is different. Each show is different. Each requirement is different. So if I'm not working, I'm between jobs on gardening leave, then I go into town, into London, I look at shops, I look at stores, I look at what people are wearing, I flick through magazines, I research what's of fashion, what's of interest to people, and how that relates to the clients that I have. Mm-hmm. If I'm on a job, I get given very strict briefs from executives and producers who want their talent, that hosting shows and presenting shows, to look in a specific way, so it's my job to go and the words into action, so I go and source the clothes, and that's kind of, in a nutshell, what I do. So I do fashion shows, I do editorial, I do magazine work, I do work for advertising clients, but it's fair to say that a large majority of my work at the moment is styling presenters for TV. Yes. And our primetime shows.
Yeah, okay. And films like Devil Wears Prada and the September issue give this picture of the whole fashion industry as being pretty cutthroat. I mean, is that accurate from what you've seen?
I think it's fair to say that the fashion industry can be quite cutthroat. I think it's fair to say that the fashion industry can be quite shallow. I think it's fair to say that it's easy to observe the fashion industry and ask the question, well, God can't possibly be in this industry. But I would flip that around to say, you know, it's up to each individual to find the God voice in the work, in their place of work. Yeah. Now, I happen to think that the fashion industry is unbelievably creative, and I believe in a God that is also creative. I believe that my God is creator God. Mm-hmm. And therefore, by default, I should have that creative kind of well inside of me. And the fashion industry is a phenomenally creative industry. So, you know, one and one makes two in my eyes. So yes. I believe that God is at the heart of fashion. It's just not obvious.
When I watched the movie The September Issue, because I'm not obviously not involved in your industry of fashion, but when I watched it, I was, as somebody who loves beauty, I was absolutely overwhelmed by the beauty of the creations they were doing. And somebody who loves photography, I loved the photography aspect and just what they were creating there. So beauty can actually point us to God, whether it's created beauty or natural beauty. So is that what you mean when you say looking for the God voice? I mean, how have you heard or seen reflections of God in the fashion industry then?
Just by, you said that you were drawn, you're attracted by the beauty that would have been created by that film. Mm. For me, it's true to say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and not what I see, not everybody might find attractive. We all look for different things, we all find different things that are beautiful and attractive to us. And what I look for is that God voice, that opportunity to go, wow, God, this is amazing. Wow, God, this is exciting. And not just throw it on, on the universe and something cosmic out there. I choose to hone what I see and my belief into, this is great, this is God. And so, there are moments of conversation, there are moments of being in a film, and I'm really touched, or I'm stirred, or I'm tense, I'm thrilled, or any of the above, and I choose to go, oh God, this is amazing. I don't really know how to explain it. It's a training that I'm trying to do to myself, because I've grown up in a Pentecostal chapel where you turn or burn, and the way to God is a very, very narrow path, and I find that quite constricting. And I am learning to find that God is not just in church, and God is not just, you can't access God just from the pulpit. You can access God from an array of things that are mediums that are out there for us. And and for me, I access God through watching films, through listening to music, through the job that I do. I hopefully exercise the gifts that I've been given, and the talents that I've been given, and I put them into action, and that, I guess, putting God in action, I guess that's what we're all about at the end of the day.
Yeah, I would agree. I would believe that the Bible is the prime way that we actually understand about God and hear from God directly, and yet God, I think, is reflected in so many things. It might be beauty, it might be truth, it might be the hug of a friend. We might see something of God in that, even if the people aren't actually believers. I would fully, and yes, and film can actually be a wonderful portrayal of some of the qualities of God, or indeed some of the effects of the absence of God in somebody's life too. This is Open House. Phil Tarling is a stylist to the stars. It might be an actor, it might be a TV presenter, or everything in between, a model. We're hearing here about his journey of being a person of faith, actually working in the fashion industry. Before we just leave this whole theme, Phil, I mean, it sounds like you've had an interesting story faith-wise, in the sense that, like you said, you grew up in a Pentecostal church. From what I'm just reading between the lines, maybe the particular church you were involved in probably would have looked at what you did with a certain degree of skepticism, or a little bit questioning about what you were doing.
I guess I grew up in a very narrow-minded church. When I went to, we're talking, when in the 70s and 80s, where it was a very different time to now in every sense of the word, in the community sense of the word, and what's acceptable in our communities, what's acceptable in our churches. And back then, I used to go to church with ripped jeans and spiky hair, and I used to be told that I was a stumbling block to people because, how I dressed and how I chose to express myself. And that is just one example of how narrow the mind of the church was. It gave me excellent Bible teaching and an exploration of my faith, but as far as it being very living, it was quite constricting. I moved to London in 95 and came to a network, a movement called Pioneer, which was birthed out of a house church, and the very expression of these churches were really understood, and it resonated with me, and it was just real and dynamic. Mm-hmm. And the church that I go to is it's called Generation, and it's a very forward thinking church, and it's a very supportive church of people who work in very random industries like mine.
Yes. See, I wonder if what reflected in what you've just said there is also the way that the Christian church has also matured in its approach to culture. I have a friend who really is into photography, and he said that for a while, also back in the 70s, by the way, his church was saying, no, you can't even do photography because that's making a graven image. Taking the Bible out of context, I would suggest.
Yeah.
But I think we've changed now. I think that, broadly speaking, the Christian church has got a lot more openness to being involved in culture, and not necessarily always against culture.
I think we have but no choice. I don't want to be. I don't want to be a gong. I don't want to be a vacuum. I don't want to have kind of empty eyes. I want my eyes to sparkle because life should be interesting and exciting, and we should be thinking about how to interact with what's around us, not to draw ourselves away into little church ghettos. And you know, my background tells me that I shouldn't do this and shouldn't go there. I shouldn't say this and shouldn't be involved in that because it's a bit grey and it's, you know, and life is black and white. But I've discovered that actually my faith is more grey now than it's ever been. It's not as cut and thrust, and it's not black and white. And yes, we as a church and as a church culture and as a God culture, we are beginning to open our lives to so much more that's available.
Love to hear people's thoughts on that. 1-300-40-2020. Give me a call and tell me what you think about what Phil's sharing. So, Phil, let's talk about some of those more challenging aspects when it comes to a person of faith being involved in the fashion industry. I mean, the lingerie client that you've actually got who keeps on taking you on. Some of the photos that I've seen of your work obviously must be with that particular client and could be interpreted as quite erotic, a bit sexualized. Now, how do you feel doing those kinds of jobs when you are stylizing for those things, which could be seen as actually quite sexual in nature?
There's no doubt about it. They are quite sexual, and they're very evocative, and they are quite erotic. It's lingerie. We're not selling lingerie to robots. We're selling lingerie to people who have hearts and souls and spirits and emotions. And it's really easy to look at what I do and critique the end results and go, well, that's erotic, that's not right. But we've only got to flip to the Song of Solomon and realize that the Bible is full of interesting sensual talk. So if that's the case, then maybe do we need to rip that out of the Bible? No, we don't. We embrace it, we look at it, we read it, and we go, well, that's amazing. And what I do, the brand is called Ann Summers, on the high street. So when I take my children to the high street and we look at shops, A lot of my friends and some parents I noticed that usher their children past this kind of billboard side lingerie in the window, whereas my children run up and go, oh my gosh, Daddy, is that your work? That's amazing. Look at her earrings. Look at her bikini. Look at her clothes. And they look at my work and go, wow, Daddy, what you've done is amazing. And it's easy to look at that end result and go, well, it's soft porn, it's not acceptable, and not give any credit to the process that has gone into being involved in this client. And like I said, this is one of the clients that keep coming back to me because they really appreciate how I work with the models, how I my work ethic and my approach to what I do. Mm-hmm. And you know, I could flip that around and say that about, for example, the banking industry, which, you know, has some very dodgy regulations, and, you know, lots of money goes, you know, to not just to ecological or to, you know, organic companies, but to arms and, you know, dirty money. And I'm not challenging people in the banking industry to say, oh, no, you know, you should never work in banking because it's money and money, you know, the love of money is the root to all evil. You know, I'm saying don't look at the end result. It's easy to criticize the end result. Appreciate the process in what I do as opposed to the end result. And so, I guess that's how I try and be and, you know, have the best work ethic I can, do the best job I can, be, you know, as professional as I can, and be, you know, the best I can for all my clients.
Yeah. Now, the argument can be put back to you that when it comes to, say, the person working in the banking industry as a Christian, then they're there to be salt and light. They're there to have a redeeming aspect to what they do, so they won't get involved in some of the dodgy practices, or they'll start to work hard to make sure that policies that are actually a bit on the nose are actually started to be turning around. Let me put a question back to you. It could actually be said that, well, lingerie stuff on billboards, etc., is still taking private matters, putting them into the public, and if you're having a role in that, are you helping to sexualize society? What's your response?
I guess society should be sexualized because we're not robots. So I can't take responsibility for that. I take responsibility in what I do. I do a very, very good job. I take responsibility in how I treat people. I treat them with kindness. I treat them with gentleness. I treat all my clients as equals. My celebrities do not get any different preferential treatment to any of the models I work with in lingerie. Everybody gets treated respectfully. And that is what I'm about, yes. Not about the end result, not about sexualizing society, not about be too afraid to get involved with certain clients because they might be a bit risque to my faith. My faith should be big enough, or my God should be big enough to be able to handle me in these situations. And it's not straightforward. Some people will be able to hopefully listen to this and go, yeah, what's the big deal? My God, he's just doing what he does. You know, it being salt and light in his industry, and by not picking and choosing, you know, the clean jobs for maybe the unclean jobs. And other people will listen to this and go, I don't get it. I don't get how he can have a faith and be involved with lingerie. I don't get how he can. You know, that's life. I'm not here for people to get 100% what I do. I don't get 100% what my faith is about. I don't get 100% what God is about, and neither should we have. The Bible clearly says that, and yeah. I guess that's not what we're about. We're on a journey of discovery and a voyage of discovery. And for me, you know, I don't work in a black and white industry. And so some of the decisions I make may not be the 100% right decision, but it's a decision I make in the light of the information I have at that time. And I take my faith very seriously with the role that I do.
Fascinating. 1-300-40-2020. I'd like to know what you think about what Phil's sharing. Phil Tarling is a stylist to the stars, might be actors, TV presenters, models. We're talking about just some of the, what you would say, maybe the challenging aspects of being a person of faith, working in the fashion industry. I'd love to know what you think about what Phil's sharing. And I'm throwing all these questions to you, mate, just simply because I know you can answer them.
Can I say that, you know, every month there is an organization called Artisan Initiative. .org here in the UK, and it's in LA, it's in New York, it's going global, and it's a group of people who work in the fashion and media industry, kind of graphics guys, music guys, fashion, a massive genre of guys in the media that have a face. And that get together on a monthly basis to share their experiences. And it is a growing, it's a massive underground culture. And that, to me, is really encouraging that, you know, I'm not in this on my own. I'm not the only stylist that has a faith. And, you know, I'm not a Christian stylist. I'm a stylist,
yes.
And I happen to have a faith. And there are plenty of other stylists out there who also are doing what they do and are very underground about it and are just being salt and light without ramming it down people's throat.
Yeah,
and, and it's brilliant to know that, you know, there are plenty of people across, you know, across London that I know of and across the UK and are global who are doing their thing for God at whatever cost.
Yes, absolutely.
And I just work in fashion. My life is not at stake. There are plenty of people out there whose lives are at stake. I just work in a really fluffy, shallow industry, and I'm fully aware of that, and I take my faith into it. And as an aside, here in the UK, you know what, on the feminist front, 3 out of every 4 women don't have the right size bra. That's a crime.
Coming from the mouth of a man, that is fascinating. Are you out on a mission to try and change that?
Not personally, but I tell you what, it's one of my biggest gripes when I'm talking to women in the workplace. I do get really cross that they don't have the right size bra that gives them the right shape. That, yeah. And sticky labels on the bottom of shoes, they're the two things that drive me absolutely mad.
So,
I'm sure there's a few more if you ask my wife, but they're the two that come to mind.
So somebody walks up to you, they've been presented to you by an agency or a TV program, whatever. What's the first thing that you do when it comes to doing what you do as a stylist? You look them over, and then what's the first thing you look at? I mean, how do you start?
Top to toe. You have to look at somebody as a whole. And, you know, the questions I always ask is, you know, what's your lifestyle? What are you about? Are you high maintenance? Are you low maintenance? What's your lifestyle all about? And from those few questions, I can easily make over people top to toe, give them some advice about hair. You know, hair, just getting the right haircut can take 10 years off you.
Mm-hmm.
Forget Botox, forget surgery, getting the right haircut and the right eyebrow shape can take years of people. Next time you look at any American film, any of our big films, and you look at the women with the most amazing eyebrows, takes years off them. So, you know, even from grooming suggestions, hair suggestions, right down to sometimes with some people, it's just a matter of, you know, actually what you're doing is okay. It's great what you're doing. What you need is to start choosing clothes that don't look like breakfast, or that don't look like bandages, that don't look like, you know, you've had them for years.
Yeah.
Just wear the same thing, but just bring some current colours into your wardrobe. And what I'm about, I'm not about fashion. I'm not squeezing people into, you know, iconic fashion images. I take people and I say, you know what, style is more important, because style is ageless.
But just what's the difference between the two? I mean, I don't. What's the difference between style and fashion?
So style isn't a slave of fashion. Fashion can be a slave of style, I guess, is one way of looking at it. Fashion is about what you must wear. This is what you must be wearing. All the kids are wearing this. You must wear this hem. You must wear this color trousers. You must wear this see-through top. You must wear these sort of heels. You must, you know, you've got to wear this on your head and this on your arm.
Yep.
And you've got to have a dog and the other one and a double-barrel surname. That's fashion. Whereas style is about, you know what, you don't have to follow fashion. You can pick and choose colors. I guess it's a friendlier version of fashion. Style is about taking elements of fashion and making them yours, as opposed to looking like a conveyor belt kind of homogenous brand. So style to me is really important. With my clients, a lot of them are, 20s, 30s and 40s. I don't squeeze fashion onto them. I make them stylish. I take lovely people and make them even more lovely. I take classic people and make them great. That's what I do.
Yes.
Very commercial. And that's what style is about, taking people and their identity and making something out of it.
Okay. And so you were saying how frustrated you get about women not wearing the right kind of bra for their body.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I tell you what, you go out this weekend, you go out and look at just one in four women has got the white bra on.
I don't think
on.
I should.
And you might get some dodgy looks staring at people's breasts.
I think so.
But you know what? It's the risk sometimes you've just got to take. And I promise you, here in the UK, three out of four women are wearing the wrong size bra. It's a shocker.
Okay, what about men? What are they doing wrong from what you can see?
What are men doing wrong? So from my generation, so I'm hitting 40 this year. My generation upwards, they don't appreciate what a good aftershave can do. They don't appreciate what a good haircut can do. They don't appreciate, not all guys appreciate the what some might call vanity. It's not vanity. It's taking care of yourself. Why look your worst when you can look your best? I heard one kind of A-list kind of old dame say that once, and I've always thought that's actually quite a good mantra. Why look your worst when you can look your best? And sometimes guys' crime is that they don't care enough about how they look.
Well, leave us with a job that you'll never forget, a stylish job that you'll never forget.
Oh, man, so many over 12 years of working. I guess one of my favourite clients was working with somebody called Joanna Lumley, who... She's a legend here in our country.
Yeah,
and
she's well known here too.
Tireless in what she does, in her campaigning. And so she's just not about beauty and the kind of frivolous sides of fashion and the industry and acting. But she does so much more. And I had the opportunity of working with her quite a few years ago. And it was for OK Magazine. It was a big glossy spread. It was amazing. And so I was kind of, oh my gosh, it's one lovely. What am I going to do? What am I going to get? So I've put myself under ridiculous pressure and got a room full of clothes for her. I found out what her favorite brands were, what she likes wearing, all the kind of stuff, the research that you do as a stylist, and just had rails of stuff in this beautiful manor house in the country. And she arrived, and I was kind of, you know, a bit nervous and a bit jumpy and a bit, oh my gosh, it's Joanna Lumley. How am I going to talk to her? Am I going to curtsy? You know, what do you do? It's Joanna Lumley. And she talks terribly, terribly, frightfully, frightfully posh. And I don't. So, you know, and in she walked, and I went, hello, Joanna. And tried to be all cool. And I clearly wasn't cool at all. I was so overwhelmed and starstruck, which I am in life. And I, you know, that's me.
Yeah.
I said, what, is there anything that you don't like? I couldn't control myself. I was trying to be brave, but I clearly wasn't. And I said, oh, darling, we'll just make anything work. We'll make anything work. Don't worry. And I was like, oh my gosh, to have somebody so fantastic as Joanna Lumley said to you, darling, we'll make anything work. And I thought, my gosh, she's such, not only is she amazing and beautiful and talks really, really posh and is in the phenomenal shape, but she really, really put everything back on me to go, just make me look good, just whatever you think. And I just could barely talk the whole day. She could have come in and have gone, oh, darling, I don't wear this and don't wear that because of bingo wings and don't do this and don't, but she wasn't. That's a good day.
Well,
that's a great day.
It's been fascinating talking to you, Phil, and it's been enjoyable as well. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, Phil Tarling, UK stylist to the stars, just like Joanna Lumley. and Johan Griffith and Sienna Miller and TV shows like X Factor and Top Gear. Fascinating, hey?
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.